go ahead and get started and call this meeting of the House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee to order. Note for the record that today is Thursday, February 23rd, 1989, and members present are Representatives Boyer, Gall, Sherry Davis, Furness, and myself, Representative Ellis. I'd like to remind all the participants to make sure that you've signed in on the witness register at the back of the room if you do intend to testify on any of the items on the committee calendar this morning. I note that we have a large audience today and would like to welcome the students from the close-up program. It's good to have you all here. And if we could take just a moment and if Sarah doesn't mind, and have the students stand up and give us your name and what community you're from. We'd like to meet you this morning.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
My name is Amy Dishman and I'm from Glen Allen.
My name is Kim Miles and I'm from Glen Allen.
I'm Mary Lindsay Queen, I'm from St. Mary's.
Darren Scum, Chief.
Lindsay Hill from Jay.
Anna Babylon from Plano.
I'm Sam Joe from Oakland Bay.
I'm Kirk Kim from Montmore.
Paulina Wilson from Dillingham.
Dora Klein, Dillingham.
Well, good morning. It's great to have you with us. I think it's very appropriate that we have students in the room when we are taking up free education bills this morning. I'd note for the record that Representative Jacko has joined the committee. And for the order of business this morning, we'll be taking Representative Larson's House Bill 119, Change in the Area Cost Differential, first, to be followed by House Bill 16, the Omnibus Education Funding Bill, for lack of a better term, the Appropriations Bill for Education, and then House Bill 21, Class Size and Teacher Load, School District Labor Negotiations. So with that, Representative Larson, if you'd like to join us at the table, please. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I wonder if we might ask the students today to take out a piece of paper and a pencil so that we can give them a test at the end of the committee hearing.
Representative Larson, I guess it's always the co-chair of the Finance Committee's prerogative to make everybody feel anxious in the room. So we are going to be looking closely at the numbers, and I do hope the students will take notes and follow along. We're glad to have you with us this morning. If you'd like to just go ahead with your presentation.
Sure, if I may. House Bill 119 is an outgrowth of course, an evolutionary process, in my opinion, that's taking place in education. It started back several years ago when the state of Alaska, as you know, was on the instructional unit program. And then there was great concern because the instructional units were politicized over the years, so that the concern was that we were funding education not according to the basic need, but according to whoever had what position, I guess, in the legislature. So around 1983, it was changed from the instructional unit to the average daily membership. And of course, that was a program then that remained for 2-3 years, and individuals had concern about it. Around 1987, we went back to the instructional unit. But at that time, there was concern once again, were we appropriating money on an as-need basis around the various districts in the state of Alaska? And of course, many districts felt that we were not. So in 1987, we had a new instructional unit program. However, that one was based on studies having to do with regional areas and not the individual school districts. And as you know, at that time, we also established the Mitigating Circumstance Fund and so forth to make up for any inequalities that may exist. So in 1988, working through the Budget and Audit Committee with the Senate, $200,000 was set aside to do the McDowell study. Now, the basic philosophy behind the McDowell study was to let an independent outside group take a look at the cost of living in Alaska in reference to the area cost differential, and to make sure that we were looking at the cost of education in Alaska, not just the cost of living in Alaska. So, ever so briefly here, Mr. Chairman, what we have is a bill now before us as a result of that study on what the best professional opinions are as to what the area cost differential should be within the school districts of Alaska. One of the things that I really want to stress is that we tried to make this a study in which politics were taken completely out. From the time the study was commissioned until really right now, which is the first hearing for this piece of legislation, the legislature has had little or nothing to do. In the study, though, however, I do want to bring up one error that was made, and it's still contained in the bill that's before us. The Haynes Borough is a third-class borough, and as a result, the third-class borough's powers are basically that of a school district, but in the Haynes Borough, the borough pays the insurance for both the borough and the school district property, and that was inadvertently kind of left out on the study. So with your consideration, Mr. Chairman, in your consideration of the bill, I would appreciate it very much if you would go to the Haynes area cost differential, and that differential should be to make it equal with all the other school districts, a 1.04 instead of a 1.03. So what we have before us, in my opinion, then, is simply a cost of doing business within the various school districts of Alaska on a fair and equitable basis. I know there was some question in relation to a fiscal note. I think the study showed two things. One, that we have approximately a $200,000 savings this year, and we do not have the need for the $3.5 million that we did put aside. However, that $3.5 million will probably be reappropriated in the supplemental bill due to the under-projection of students in Alaska for the foundation formula. Someone did have a question here.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, thank you, Robert.
Fred has signed up to testify. We're going to take you in just a moment.
Thank you.
We'll make sure we get you in. Are there any questions for the sponsor? Representative Furness.
Yes, just one editorial note. Draw your attention to page 3, line 2. There's a bracket in here. There's stray there. Probably, I don't know how suggestive that is, but you may want to just correct it. The second half of the bracket went to line 3.
Oh.
Yeah. The other, just curiosity, I noticed Anchorage has a factor of 1. Juneau, Ketchikan, I believe, Kenai, but Fairbanks has a factor of 1.03. Given the sameness of the respective communities, why is that?
Well, basically the study was based on both the cost of doing business in Fairbanks as well as the personnel costs. And that was the result of the findings of the study, that it costs a little bit more to do business in Fairbanks than it does in Anchorage and Mat-Su and Kenai. You might note that in the study, 11 districts remain the same. 29 districts have less than a 3 percentage point change, and 42 of the 55 districts were less than 5 point change. So it showed that even though we had done the earlier study by regions, we weren't that far off.
Mr. Chairman, just two other observations. Representative Lawson, draw your attention again to page 3, lines 2 and line 14. I notice the rail belt has a minus 9 reduction, and Yukon Flats a minus 10. But traditionally, we don't see costs decreasing in these outlying districts. What are the mitigating factors or all the factors that has led to the decrease in their factor?
Well, my assumption is that what you've been getting isn't necessarily what the cost is of doing education. And what we tried to do is to find out what is the cost of providing education in those areas. And when you compare it with all others and you compare the cost of living and the cost of personnel, those were the findings of the studies.
And is it safe to say then that the study basically provided you with the cost data in order to make the corrections then?
That's correct.
Correct the cost data.
These are all the assumptions Representative Furness that were the recommendations of the study.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Davis?
Yes, Representative Larson. I guess I'm not sure that I agree with the way the study was done in order to, in looking at what has happened as a result of it, but is it possible that if you were in a district in which you had always received less from the state and thus your local community had to make up more of a difference, that would end up just being self-perpetuating? If you had kept your, for instance, if you kept your personnel costs down, kept your cost of business down by whatever means, because you knew you weren't going to get as much money from the state as some other districts did, and that had always been the case, would that just be self-perpetuating in the study?
It should not be, because what was studied was, say, the breadbasket of each community, as well as the personnel cost of each community. And one thing I'd like to stress, Mr. Chairman, this isn't the end. This is the beginning of some of the reforms that are needed.
Further questions for the sponsor?
I just want to ask, what study was this based on? Was this
the McDowell study?
With your...
Senator Binkley and I were kind of the co-chairman in charge of the $200,000, and the McDowell study that resulted in this was done through the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee then.
What was the year on the study?
Just completed here this last November.
That's pretty recent information.
Yeah. If there's nothing further, Representative Larson, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
I'd like to call Steve Hull next from the Department of Education. Steve, there's a... the committee members, we don't yet have a fiscal note in our... in our packet, so I'd like you to speak to that, and then I have a couple of other questions. So,
yes, sir. I'm Steve Holt from the Department of Education. Such a deal. This is a $68,400 savings to the state, and I'm sure that's either good or bad depending upon whose ox is being decapitated. In some instances, the department does not have a position on the proposal, Mr. Chairman.
On the question, Representative Furness raised the point of the brackets on page 3 around Rail Belt and Sand Point. Those are being combined to create a solution. East is being added.
Sand Point, Mr. Chairman,
can you just clarify what's going on?
Will go out of existence as an independent school district July 1.
Okay.
Rail Belt may well go out of existence July 1 with a 16% reduction, which would be imposed by this legislation. The bracket with respect to Rail Belt means a reduction in the instructional unit value.
Mm-hmm.
As to Sand Point, if the borough did not form, the study would recommend a roughly 5.3% increase for that first-class city.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question?
Representative Furness, please.
I had assumed that the bracket was a mistake here, so are you saying that it should be that way?
I assume that's a typographical error. I can't address it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Larson, did you?
Yeah, it's not an error. It's supposed to be that way because of the change that's taken place of the forming of the new Lucian world so far.
So the back of the
Okay, so our Sand Point is going out of business. Is that correct?
Yes, Sand Point will be incorporated into the new world.
Okay.
So,
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Jackal.
Is that the same for King Cole and OCI? King Cole under 1.27? They're in the same.
King Cole is also going out of.
Yes. Okay. King Cove on page 2, line 16. I mean, that one's clear with the brackets around before the K and after the 7.
Mr. Chairman, it appears to be a drafting idiosyncrasy rather than bracket sand point in its entirety. The area differential for rail belt, which is being replaced by 1.14, which is to say 1.23, is the beginning of the bracket, and because Sand Point is going out of existence, it forms the ending of the bracket.
Oh.
A more clear way to characterize it would be to bracket 1.23 and then bracket Sand Point and 1.27. It's just the way the drafter did it.
I see. And then fill us in on the addition of Aleutian East. That's the forming of a new school district on page 1.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. The Aleutian East Borough incorporated over a year ago and opted to assume the operation of the schools effective July 1 of this coming fiscal year. So it needs to be inserted with an area differential, or we have no mechanism to pay the new borough.
And you just said Aleutians East. Do we have a typo here, or is it Aleutians East?
I assume this is the correct spelling, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Okay, we'll take up the bracket issue with the drafter and make sure it's...
It is Aleutians.
Aleutians?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll check that out as well. Thank you, Representative Jacko. Representative Furness?
Thank you to Mr. Hall, Mr. Chairman. I make note, Mr. Hall, in a memo from... Representative Larson, he indicates here that, let's see, they'll need approximately $200,000 less for the 89-90 school year. And you indicate that it's a result in a savings of $68,400. What's the difference there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Furness, the memo from Representative Larson was correct at that time. The information we provided based on our earlier projections of the program indicated roughly $194,000 or $5,000 savings. The more recent projections indicate a $68,400 savings.
Thank you.
Are there further questions for Steve? Representative Boyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve, you said that the department doesn't have a position on the bill, but I would guess that the department has done some kind of an analysis of the McDowell study report for your own internal use, and can you share... Or has that happened, and if it has happened, can you share that information with us?
Mr. Chairman, all I can give you are general impressions. It's the best information that exists. It, as you may recall, when the existing foundation program was going through the legislature, the area differentials came under some degree of criticism, the rationale being that the area differentials were predicated upon a study which had nothing to do with school district operations. Our response to that was, that may be true, but it's the best we've got. This recommendation represents an improvement on that earlier study. The people who did this study are competent. They do good work. We don't have any philosophical problem with the recommendation. The problem we do have is, at least with respect to some of the reductions, they appear to be somewhat draconian as a one-year adjustment. That's exacerbated significantly when you consider that there could well be reductions in the foundation program overall as a result of the discussions on the operating budget. It's confused to an additional degree considering some of the other legislation that's in, which would adjust either instructional unit entitlements or other aspects of school district finance. So in the broad brush of the legislative session, there are lots of different pieces. Focusing on this specifically, we have no information which leads us to believe that the information presented here is false. We're just concerned that some of the the districts which are affected are going to be in pretty bad shape if this is imposed at the beginning of the fiscal year.
But it's still just the best information we've got. It's not necessarily accurate to suggest everything in the study is empirically correct or without flaw. Then
I'm not confident to deal with the statistical reliability or accuracy of the study, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Furness.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Hawley, your testimony intrigues me, to say the least. I note, too, that there is $3.5 million appropriated for correctness of the inequities. And it appears, again, according to Representative Larson, those funds are made available for reappropriation and would most likely appear in the request for supplemental. Are you perhaps alluding to that we may need to hold this 3.5 in abeyance to take care of any shortfalls that the new formulas or new factors may incur?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Furness, no. In fact, in the administration's supplemental bill, the 3.5 is being requested for reappropriation for the supplemental.
But again, that's supplemental supplemental relief for this past year, or this past budget, I assume.
The current year, yes,
right.
Sir.
Okay. But then you still seem to say that based upon some of the reductions, that you're not comfortable at this point without, I guess, additional information, if the districts can operate within the formula that will be provided to them, which would say that they're going to run short of money.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Furness, what I'm saying is, and let's set the $3.5 million aside for a moment. Okay. This study would suggest that, on balance, we can do with $68,400 less in the foundation program than we're presently estimating. If this were implemented, some districts would go up. I'm sure they think this is a fine report. Some districts would go down. I'm relatively certain they would have some criticism of its effect. What I'm saying is I don't know what practical effect a 16.5% reduction is going to have on the Rail Belt School District. I don't know what 5.2% reduction is going to have on the Nenana School District, particularly when the district is alleging in other legislation that it needs more money. Taken in perspective, I think what we need to do is balance out the effects of the recent 874 changes in Indian lands, which had a result of providing additional money to school districts. We need to take a look at the effect this would have. We need to take a look at what's going to happen with the overall budget for public education. That is, whether the instructional unit value is going to be maintained at 60,000 or it's going to be reduced, and whatever other changes are being proposed. I think it would be a mistake to view any one of those in isolation without looking at the cumulative effect.
That's all my questions. Thank you.
Anything further for Steve? Representative Gall.
Just one question, Mr. Hall. I've been looking at that other legislation, the single site, dual site legislation, and really appreciate, incidentally, the efforts of the sponsor of this bill to try to resolve some of these questions that we kind of left unresolved last year. And I know that that's another effort to do the same in a different sort of way. Do you think it's appropriate to consider those matters together and try to maybe get the analysis of the department as to whatever additional fine-tuning is appropriate? I ask you this because the department isn't taking a position on this bill, whereas in the amendments that we had in finance last year to try to bring ourselves closer to an accurate formula, the department was very active. So what is the department's posture on these different initiatives? Do you see one as more urgent than another? Do you think they need to be put together? Do you think some third approach is necessary? I'm not quite sure I understand the non-position. Where is the department heading in its thinking on this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gall, I think it would be a good idea to evaluate the effects of this legislation, the proposed legislation on single and dual site school districts, and any other that deals with public school finance after the appropriation for the foundation program has been established.
I see, so that you're dealing with dollars rather than just distribution ratios.
You're dealing with the cumulative effects of all of those different bills that affect what districts get.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Seeing nothing further, thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you.
I hope you can stay with us. There may be another question or two.
Yes, sir.
Following Mr. Shields. Mr. Shields, would you go up to the table, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning. Thank you for coming to Juneau.
I'm Fred Shields, mayor of the Haynes Borough, and I'm also the school board president because Haynes is the only third-class borough in the state. When we received this copy of the McCullough differential study, we couldn't understand why our differential had gone to 103 from 105 when everyone in our neighborhood remained the same and we had no changes. I came down and I visited with Eric McDowell and spent several hours, actually more than 2 hours, going over his methodology. At first he sat on the other side of the table, and when I left he was on my side of the table, and we were looking through this thing going, what's wrong? What we determined was that the intimacy of the Haynes Borough School Board and the Borough Assembly as one body, the methodology and the study didn't account for that. The insurance dropped through the boards, which I see you have a letter before you to ask for 104, but we went on and we found a few other areas where it's smaller amounts, and we came away feeling that 105 should be the correct reinstatement. I see the letter doesn't state that, but that's where Eric and I left it. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for having the opportunity.
You're welcome. Representative Gall.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Shields. Pleasure to have you with us. I'm a little disturbed by what you're saying. Could you list or summarize or give us some sense of what other areas you came upon beyond the insurance?
Well, we sat down and Eric explained there's a weighting. Data was collected and each data had a particular weight to it. And then the weight was run through a multiplier and finally it came up with the gross figures. We have the same accounting firm between the borough and the school, and sometimes it's a little hard to tell exactly where time is attributed to the school and to the borough. Sometimes if there's more in that's a fuzzy area. There are other areas of the same fuzziness that I'm not particularly conversant with totally, although our superintendent would be, I'm sure, happy to fill you in with all the details. But I remember leaving the office with Eric and feeling that, oh, yes, we had found those areas where disagreement between the 103 and the 105 existed and felt quite good about it.
And is it, did I understand correctly that you left there with statements specifically by Mr. McDowell stating that he felt 105 was the appropriate figure?
Well, no, Mr. McDowell felt a little, he confided in me that yes, when the 105 came out, he couldn't understand why it was a 103 and felt, you know, like, well, he said he even looked back through it himself. I said, I can't imagine this is a 103. I don't see any reason for it. And when I left, his feeling was, well, I'm not sure if this study is set in, you know, in iron or cast or if it's changeable. And he said, well, you should make an appeal from here. And
well, I appreciate that. And I must say also, as I look through some of the changes that are occurring in House District 2, I do have some concerns that I suspect the committee will be working on in future hearings. I appreciate your comments very much.
And we're a small district, and although one percentage point on there is not a great deal of money, to us it represents a lot.
Ms. Shields, thank you for your testimony.
Chairman Ellis, thank you.
My intention is to hold this bill over for further discussion. Mr. McDowell is not with us today. It sounds like we may have some questions about the methodology and about this specific point. Members do have copies of the study in their packets. Backup materials, I'm sure, would be available to the committee. If Representative Larson doesn't have those, I'm sure Eric could provide them with us at a later time. So we will continue discussions on this matter. We can talk to Mr. McDowell at the next at the next hearing about the 104 versus 105 versus 103. So that's my intention. Is there any further discussion? Representative Furness.
Representative Larson, one last question.
Sure.
Yes, Representative Larson, if I could. My question to you, sir, is, this sounds like a ridiculous question, but how important is this legislation in terms of the, I believe it's House Bill 16?
I'm not acquainted with House Bill 16.
Is that the pass-through grant? That's a yearly funding bill. The funding bill.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 119, the bill we're funding now, is an attempt to identify the cost of education in the school districts of Alaska. In other words, it's just an attempt to establish a base on the latest and best information we have. Now, any of these other pieces of legislation that we have before us, I think, should not distract from our base. We may go in and look at the formula funding itself. We may look at the funding of single or school, dual-site school districts. But that should not distract from us having a base in the true cost of education within those districts. So I look upon this as kind of being a separate piece of legislation from all of the other pieces of legislation. This is just trying to establish a base, and what we do after that or how we fund it is another question, but it's not related to this, in my opinion.
Representative Border.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I tend to take a different view, and the reason why I do, and I think it's become more apparent when we discuss the appropriation for the pass-through programs, is exactly the position of the departments, that you can't tinker with the overall funding level without impacting the formula itself, the legislation itself. And if we, in fact, short fund the formula, as discussions have taken place, then you need to open up the formula. And if you open up the formula to adjust, for instance, the value, unit value, then you might well, because that's a base that we're talking about of funding, then you ought to perhaps entertain the adjustments of that we're talking about are contemplated in HB 119, and then you might as well take a look at all the other adjustments too. I don't see that once you've opened the formula for one purpose, when you're talking about basic funding, that you shouldn't entertain all of the issues that are attendant to the formula, because it took us three or more years to work to get to the formula we adopted last year. And my guess is that once you open up the formula for any of these things, that you open kind of Pandora's box, and that there are a whole set of other issues that are probably attendant to establishing that base for education. Among them might be the drop-in valuation that we're addressing in the supplemental bill this year, property valuation. And so there are a whole host of things that I think ought to be involved in the overall discussion. And unfortunately, I think that as we put off the decision on funding the formula, we necessarily have to put off the decision making on these all of these other attendant areas, and you may find that we're caught in just a time bind and not able to address some of these other attendant areas because of the budget, the drive of the budget.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my response to Representative Boyer would be is that I guess we do have a disagreement here. I think if we have to reduce, say, funding by 3%, that if we stick to the present formula and we take 3% from a district that's getting 3% more than the study shows that it needs, it's just moving us down to its need. If we take 3% from a district that's being underfunded now, we're going to compound their problem while we really didn't do anything to hurt the other district. So I think what we're trying to do here, if we got to make any of these other changes, let's make sure everyone's getting the appropriate amount of money, and then whatever change we have will affect everyone the same.
Representative Boyer in response, and then Representative Davis.
Just to follow up, it sounds as if, though, if every district had an opportunity to appeal the study, I mean, my district has come forward and suggested all kinds of problems, and we're going to speak to those in more detail when we do have Mr. McDowell before us, but it sounds as if other districts, though, could equally come in and make some adjustments and changes, and that's my only point. I don't know that it's just as easy as taking these these suggestions without looking at each district in more detail to find out whether or not, in fact, it does reflect, the study does reflect the actual cost of doing business, educational business in a district.
Mr. Chairman, I'm agreeing with Representative Boyer this time. I think we should have Mr. McDowell in so that he can explain his methodology to make all of you folks feel comfortable. The one thing that I do feel uncomfortable about is getting all the superintendents and so forth. Every one of the 55 superintendents will come in and tell you that their district needs more money, that this was left out or that was left out. And that's exactly what we were trying to prevent in this study. Let's keep, superintendents are more political than we are. So let's.
Better paid too.
Better paid too. So that's what we tried to keep out of here.
Okay. We need to wind this up in a few minutes, and there's another item to take care of. So, Representative Diggs?
Just real briefly, I would really like to have maybe a work session where we discuss these issues together and have McDowell here and have Representative Larson. Because I haven't been able to understand the difference between things like the cost of living versus the cost of doing business. And I do know that there are some small districts in Peter's district area as well as in mine that are going to be hurt badly, potentially, if we don't get some more money, not less money. So I have some real concerns, and I think we could do that.
I appreciate the comment. That is my intent to for us to work on this as a committee of the whole in a work session with Representative Larson and Mr. McDowell. So that's the way we will proceed. Representative Larson, you did speak in your opening presentation about wanting to correct the technical error in the study on page 2, line 7, there beside Haynes. The 104 is what you spoke to. Mr. Shields spoke to the 105, but 104 is what's contained in the letter from Mr. McDowell and the one you suggested. And I would hope to be able to make that change this morning. Representative Gall, do you want to speak to that?
Sure. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I sympathize with the desire of the Haynes School District, and I think those discussions will become part of this later discussion that Representative Davis spoke to. But just so that we, and I especially respect what Mr. Larson has tried to do over the years, which is to only put forward, in his views, things which were based on the kind of mathematical development of this rather than a political development. So I would appreciate it if we could correct the technical error in the bill at this time and move that 103 to the 104 and begin our discussions from the base that McDowell has actually put forward rather than carrying forward an error, which is all we're talking about here. So if I could, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that correction and ask unanimous consent.
Okay. For the purposes of
discussion. Representative Boyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't have a real problem with that at all. With the understanding of the committee, though, that there may be other technical problems with the bill that also will be reflected in changes there. And I would hate to think that because one school board chairman or president was able to impact the McDowell study, that others might not also have flaws and that we might entertain other adjustments here as we move through the process. So I would withdraw my objection with that understanding of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Boyer, thank you. I agree with you completely, and I think the substance of the bill does need discussion, and appreciate your helping us on the technical changes. And also, if other technical changes do come up, I'll certainly support making those corrections.
Mr. Chairman, my parting comment would be is that was part of the McDowell process, that after they had their findings, they went back to the various districts and asked for a response. And this is one of the responses they got from their request, and that was about it.
Yeah. Representative Boyer, your comments are well taken. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay. The legislation, House Bill 119, will be held over to a future time. Okay, let's take up the next item before us. Appropriations bill. At our last hearing on this on the education funding bill, we did not adopt the committee substitute. There is a committee substitute in your packet that makes the only change in it is a title change. You'll remember that the original bill was very broad. An act entitled An Act Making Appropriations for Certain Pass-Through Grant Programs and Providing for an Effective Date. We have tightened that title to read An Act Making Appropriations to the Department of Education for K through 12 Support and School Construction Debt Retirement and Providing for an Effective Date. That's a more traditional title for the education funding bill. I don't think we all can figure out that we feel more comfortable, I think, with this bill moving forward and having a better chance of looking like something that came out of this committee once we're all the way through the process. So I'll entertain a motion, Representative.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we adopt the proposed committee CS for House Bill 16.
Is there any objection to the motion? If not, the committee substitute is the item before us for discussion. Representative Boyer, I understand you had some materials for the committee.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I thought that it would be helpful to have a discussion with the department of the effects of a short funding of the formula specifically. And the department had prepared in late December an internal document for the commissioner that kind of went through some of the foundation issues that would need to be looked at in the context of a reduction of the overall formula amount, and that's what we're passing out here. And what I thought I would do is have Steve Hole with the department come forward and perhaps walk us through the memo, if he would. But the most important aspect of the memo that's important for all of us to keep in context here is that any reduction of the $475 million results in a disparity, potential disparity problem, and causes the legislature to pass legislation changing the formula to deal with, among other things, the disparity problem. And as you each read this and as Steve goes through it, I think that'll become more clear. The disparity problem is something that we've dealt with over the last 2.5-3 years, trying to make a formula that kept us out of federal harm's way. And the last thing we want to do is lose federal funding at any level, and so that gets to the heart of the whole disparity problem. And any adjustment downward in the full, in otherwise what would be full funding of the formula, causes some disparity problems and would cause or necessitate a change in the formula. Otherwise, we would jeopardize federal funding among other things. So, if we could, Mr. Chairman, have Steve walk through that memo and perhaps, you know, just highlight the issues for us and hopefully bring a broader understanding of that issue and the sensitivity of funding the formula itself to the other members.
Steve.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Steve Holt from the Department of Education. For the record, Mr. Chairman, and as an overlay for whatever discussion ensues, I want to make it clear that I'm not advocating a reduction in the foundation program. It's the department's position of the state board and the Coalition for Education and everybody who has any interest in public education, that maintaining the instructional unit value at $60,000 and appropriating enough money to fund it is absolutely essential. Having said that, and in response to Representative Boyer's request, the issue in any discussion related to how much money ought to be appropriated for public education is the federal 874 disparity test. And very briefly, any state which takes 874 into account, which is to say a state which has an equalized funding program and reduces state aid by some factor in response to a school district's entitlement under Public Law 874, has to show the federal government that the effect of doing that is better, more efficacious in terms of equity than if it didn't do it. And the feds have devised a test, which is mathematical, to answer that question. And that's called the disparity test. And very simply, the disparity test is a series of calculations which must be performed, and the effect of which must be that the difference between the richest district considered and the poorest district considered has to be less than 25% in revenues per student. And so that's what we're working on. The effect of underfunding the program means that there is a proration of state aid. Everybody gets an equal reduction. The instructional unit value remains the same, which means that local support is based on $60,000 per unit. State aid is based on some number under that. One class of district, which is the REAAs, because they have no local support, would go down at a uniform rate a little quicker than the municipalities because their local support remains constant or could even increase, depending upon whether they're at the 6 mil cap. At some point, that the effect of that is to break the disparity test. And under our calculations, it's at about 15%. Which is to say, if you reduce state aid by 15% and leave the instructional unit value at $60,000, then we're going to break the disparity test. The effect of reducing state aid and reducing the instructional unit value is to ratchet everybody down at the same rate on the basis of both state and local support. So the disparity test isn't harmed if that approach is used. Again, it only becomes significant when the legislature is contemplating a reduction in the neighborhood of 15%. Up to that point, it doesn't seem to get very critical. We get closer to 25%, but it looks like we still make the test. And as a practical matter, if the legislature contemplates a reduction of 15%, then probably the disparity test is the least of our problems.
So, Mr. Chairman, we could have roughly a $70 million reduction in overall aid to education and without pushing the disparity test. And as you just said, that in and of itself would be fairly traumatic to the system.
Mr. Chairman, fairly traumatic, I think, is a very
safe... doesn't even approach what we're talking about.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, in the discussion on the earlier legislation, I guess I have to say I feel strongly both ways in terms of Representative Larson's position and Representative Boyer's in the position of the department. When you contemplate reductions in the program, there's a philosophical construct and a practical one. And I guess my comments are aimed more at the practical than the philosophical, because House Bill 119 is a philosophical statement, which I think is well advised and well intentioned. But the practical effect of a reduction is something I think that needs to be given a fair amount of consideration, as is any contemplation of a reduction in the foundation program.
Further discussion. Thank you, Steve.
To answer all of the questions, Representative Boyer.
I'm sure that more will come up as this sets in.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Have members had a sufficient amount of time to read through this memo provided by Representative Boyer? Okay, let's take just a few more moments to do that. Yes. No, all we did today was change the title. We have had this legislation before us for some time now. We're approaching what I think this committee would impose as a of a self-imposed deadline for funding of education because of our, we've talked about our philosophical commitment to early funding of education. As you know, there are budget discussions going on in the budget summit and in the minority and majority caucuses about our approach to spending this year. We're all aware of the POMs and letters and phone calls we get from people that are, some who are well-informed, some who are not so well-informed members of the public, saying cut the budget. And so the question arises in this standing committee, because we've wanted to take a more active role, I guess, in determining spending priorities. And a lot of those decisions have been made elsewhere in the past. All of those things sort of converge this session and sort of focus on this bill because it's such a major part of the budget and it's such a primary responsibility of this committee. I've wrestled with this issue of whether now is the time or this is the place to begin significant reductions in state spending. I find myself having a great deal of difficulty with that because of my commitment to public education, and I think there's a strong commitment on the part of members of this committee. So what we're here to decide this morning, in the time we have remaining, and we do have one more item on the calendar, but this is something we need to focus on now, is whether we would like to begin the budget-cutting process that the public wants us to engage in this session here, or if we would like to send this bill on in its current form at essentially full funding of the formula and the auxiliary education funding programs, and to allow things to develop further within the caucuses, within the finance committee, and within the budget summit. That's my personal preference, because there are still very large unresolved issues. As you can see with when the co-chairman of the finance committee was with us, there is not consensus yet on our approach to education funding, whether we will hold education harmless, whether we will have major public hearings and determine what kind of reduction can be sustained, and then how that reduction would be carried out if that's what people intend to do. And Representative Boyer and Representative Larson had a discussion going about, you know, the veracity of various approaches to reductions. My personal preference would be to pass this bill on in this current form as a statement, I think a strong statement by this committee. If people feel otherwise, we'll definitely consider that. We can send this on, though. This is one option, is to send it along, members of this group to participate actively and ask for invitations to all of us to participate in the Finance Subcommittee for Education, which Representative Boyer serves on, because I would like to continue a close connection between the Standing Committee and the Finance Subcommittee, and I'm glad we have a member of this committee on there. Continue those discussions and try and get more consensus in the majority and minority caucuses on our approach here. So with that, I've spoken long enough. I'd like to hear from others. Representative Davis.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I really appreciate your approach to this thing. I am truly dedicated to the idea of trying to cut the state budget, but this is not why I want to cut it. This, to me, is number one priority in the state. It's number one with the people I represent. It's number one with people I've talked to everywhere, and I don't think this is where we start cutting the state budget. And I think your approach is wonderful in that this committee sends a strong message if we send this bill out fully funded and intact. Not that it's going to stay that way. I recognize that, but I think we ought to fight for that approach.
That's a big discussion going on, is that we all should participate actively in. Should our approach to budget reductions, which are inevitable this year in some of some magnitude, will they be across the board, or will we prioritize state responsibilities and make reductions where things don't rise to a constitutional mandate?
Exactly.
Representative Gall.
I couldn't have said it better than you two just said it, and I think if we're going to discuss this further, I'd like to go over the motion on the table to move the bill.
Preceding that, Representative Boyer.
Yeah, I would just like to make a statement too that what we've tried to do here is not inconsistent with what is going on at the summit level, and that is to contemplate any reduction in the context of the FY90 proposed budget. These numbers are full funding of the FY90 budget, including the debt retirement, which shows up in two places in the budget, but this puts it all in its proper context in the full 80% entitlement. And again, that's consistent with the discussions and the agreements of our summiteers, as they've become known. What I tried to accomplish or want to accomplish in passing out the memo from the department is to have an understanding of the fairness of any reduction which may have to occur. And the fairness is reflected, I think, in that memo is through a reduction in the unit value if you have to do something. All of the other potential scenarios affect districts differently, but the fairest reduction is a reduction across the board in the unit value. I'm not, to take Steve Hull's phrase, I'm not endorsing that at this particular time, and which leads me to the last point I'd like to make is that the fiscal policy working group, of which I'm a part and other members here are part of that working group, we have broken up the budget into different areas, and one of the areas that I've been working on is the Department of Education's budget. And in my reduction presentations to the working group, I have held personally the formula harmless and looked for reductions in other areas. What that necessitates is obviously looking at the other pass-through programs to local governments like pupil transportation, school bond debt, and a few other areas, and a larger reduction in the budget of the department, a budget which constitutes roughly $31 million, I think, of general fund dollars. Believe me, a $4 or $5 or $6 million reduction in that budget will be painful for all of us, and we need to be mindful of that. And those of us who are going through some of those reviews of the budgets are finding it that it's going to be incredibly difficult. And I would just share your support anyway for full funding of education, if possible. But all of us need to be looking at these budgets very, very carefully.
I have something before motion as well.
Yeah,
did you have a comment?
Yeah, I do. I agree with what you said, Mr. Boyer, and I guess I just need to mention, since you mentioned debt service, that I'm advised that there are more bond elections ongoing. And my support for this legislation does not in any way imply support for additional development of school debt. And specifically, I want it on the record that I will not support reimbursement of additional school debt until a cap and a limit and some regulations are put on the unrestricted development of debt at a time when we can least afford it. So I'm ready to go forward to meet our past obligations in the way of the debt. I'm ready to go forward to fully fund our constitutional obligation to education, but I'm adamantly opposed to the development of new state debt, and that will be a consistent position of mine. So I just thought it was appropriate to say it since you raised the issue of debt.
And on that point, we would expect to have a subcommittee report on Representative Swackhammer's school debt retirement policy in the next couple of weeks, and to be able to take action on that, send that along to finance. So that's an important attendant issue. In the past, the typical thing to see at this point in the session would be for the Senate to have passed their school funding bill, usually at full funding or something approaching that, and it to be here in the House, and us being in the position of making decisions on their bill. I'm happy to say that because of the summit cooperation between the House and Senate leadership, that has not yet happened. Their bill is positioned in the Senate Finance Committee. Ours will be moving on here, I hope, to the House Finance Committee. And we can come to the agreement, sort of, is that we'll come to some consensus about education funding before one side or other lobs a bomb at the other and tries to embarrass the other body, which has been the typical procedure in past years, at least as long as I've been here. So I think we're making progress on this. I think that makes it, puts the onus on all of us to sort of rabble-rouse in our respective caucuses and with our colleagues to get the legislature to come to some consensus early, if that's possible this year, because we will, we're rapidly approaching the time frame for what could be considered early funding of education. Otherwise, this will be put off until the very last moment of the session at about 4 a.m. or 5 a.m., and I don't think this group makes very good decisions when we're delirious from lack of sleep. One other thing I'd like to mention is that I've asked committee staff to begin drafting a letter of communication between our, not a letter of intent, but a letter of communication between our committee it could turn into a letter of intent. But a letter between our committee and the Finance Committee laying out some of the issues as we see them, and that will be in draft form for you in the next couple of meetings to consider. That would not hold up this bill, but it would be a statement of the issues involved as we've considered them here in the HES committee, and I believe then we've lived up to our obligations. With that said, is there any member of the public that really feels a burning desire to say something at this point? Because I'm about to entertain a motion to move the bill. Representative Furness?
I just want to state, Mr. Chairman, having to do with the debt service, I particularly support the full funding of the debt service. I know that there will be an attempt or a tendency to want to cut that by at least up to $8 million. Mm-hmm. We need to be mindful that those dollars will be passed to the local communities in some instances. Those communities may not be able to fully absorb that without going back to the classroom with some additional cuts. So in addition to supporting the other accounts, we need to give particular attention to the debt service portion. So.
Representative Davis?
I would move the bill and ask unanimous consent on due pass.
Okay. Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, the bill moves out with unanimous approval. Thank you very much. The next item before us is House Bill 21. As members will remember, this bill has been before us in previous hearings, and we have several people signed up to testify. Bruce Cummings?
Hi, Andy, this is Jim.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Cummings, I'm the Director of Labor Relations in the Department of Administration. Recognizing that this is primarily a local government issue, to keep my comments short. Members of the committee may not be aware that we have one bargaining unit of state employees with whom we negotiate under the provisions of Title 14. Those are the certificated teachers at Mount Edgecombe School District. We are presently in active negotiations with that group at the stage of impasse pending mediation at the end of this month. We are concerned about an amendment to the collective bargaining law as it affects the state employees at this time. This bill is presently written would put the issues of class size and teacher load on the bargaining table as mandatory subjects. We don't feel that that's in the state's best interest right at this moment, given the number of issues on which we're presently unable to reach agreement and our very serious attempts to economize. So, to the extent that this bill does affect state employees, we disfavor it and might suggest that one way to divorce the issue of state employees and state employee bargaining units from local government would be to return the teachers of Mount Edgecombe who are state employees to coverage of the Public Employment Relations Act like all other state employees. Right now they are an anomaly. They are the only state employees with whom we do not negotiate Title 23.
Are there questions for the witness? If not, Mr. Cummings, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Judy Salo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I think that I'll just be real brief today since I have testified on this before. I think there are two, you know, separate and distinct arguments for this legislation, and one is that it's, you know, sort of the union argument that it should be a topic of collective bargaining because it probably is not a working condition that affects teachers in the classroom more than the size of that class. And then the other argument, sort of encapsulated, is a professional and educational issue, which is that the number of children in the classroom affects those students as seriously as it affects that teacher who's in the classroom. And that's something that over and over again, as we survey teachers and say, what's the most important thing in terms of bargaining, even though they know they can't bargain class size, what's the most important item to them is class size. And when parents come in for parent conferences and say, why don't you do something about class size when you've got 33 children in your classroom, you can say, well, I can join you and go and testify to the board and try to move it that way, but we can't legitimately do anything about it because we can't discuss it at the bargaining table. It's true that in times of financial woe here, you can economize. And when you do economize by increasing class size, you're doing that at the expense of children. And, you know, we've got research that's all over the place in terms of does class size affect student achievement. And there has been, you know, there have been people who have said it doesn't. You know, it really doesn't have anything to do with that. Well, I think to most teachers that is just, you know, bizarre. You've got to be able to know the children before you can teach them. There isn't anything that you can put in front of me that would say that class size doesn't affect student achievement. And a recent example I think that proves that real well is a school district outside of Tacoma that had taken all of its resources and channeled them into significantly reducing their class size. And they were a district that had been receiving a lot of Title I monies or some sort of federal assistance because of the level of achievement in their school. When they reduced the class size to 15:1 throughout the school, their standardized test scores rose so dramatically that they said it was sort of a mixed blessing because they lost all of the federal funds. They no longer qualified for that program. But they had made, you know, you can deploy, you can do a lot of things with the school district budget. And they had decided that their effort would be significantly to reducing that class size. And what I want to see is if we end up with another problem in Alaska regarding educational funding, I don't want to see 30 and 40 students in the classroom again. And I at least want to see that the professionals who are most affected by that class size at least have the ability to talk about it at the bargaining table. So again, I urge your support of House Bill 21.
Are there any questions from Ms. Sable? Not Judy, thank you very much. Steve McPheeters?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the opportunity to testify on the third hearing. First of all, I'd like to thank you for having this hearing on this bill for at least three times, because last year I would have called this bill the Silver Bullet Bill, because it went sailing through the House so quickly that it really impressed me the fact that if we could do all these bills that we think are important as expeditiously as that one, our time would be very short here in Juneau. Since the first hearing, I went back and did some homework and surveyed the principals around the state of Alaska. And I'd like to speak on this bill from a little different perspective, and that perspective is in line with Representative Gall's concerns about trying to maintain quality education. Unfortunately, this bill is not speaking to the improvement of quality education. If we're really wanting to address quality education, then it's got to be done in a cooperative manner. And that cooperation is done through plea yield, through other methods of communication than at the bargaining table. Research and national studies now that are out continue to tell us that we need to have a decision-making authority at the building level, and that we must involve teachers and administrators in coming to some conclusions on these decisions. This is done in a cooperative manner. This is not done at the bargaining table. In talking with the principals from the larger urban areas, Anchorage, Juneau, Ketchikan, Mat-Su, Kenai, they informed me that class size is their number one priority when they discuss the planning with their teachers in the next coming year. In many cases, these principals sit down with the teachers as an example. They'll sit down with the fourth grade teachers and a special education teacher at the spring of the year, and then they will plan how these children will go on into the fifth grade and who they should go to so that they can get the maximum quality education. If indeed this becomes a collective bargaining issue, then we're putting up fences, we're putting up walls, we're putting into a situation of us and they. We're not getting it into a cooperative professional discussion arena. Also, you should know that the Northwest Accreditation Association, which does accredit the high schools around the state of Alaska, does require class size information and certain class size requirements. And so consequently, we are, again, zeroing in on quality education being spoken to in a collegial and cooperative manner. I think the cooperative manner can be best described in an application that was given to, submitted to the Department of Education from a junior high school in the Anchorage area, whom I'm sure you all are aware of, that that highlights the importance of being able to discuss, again, out of concern for the issue around the table in a more cooperative area. In their application, which indeed they were recognized, Clark Junior High School, recognized as an outstanding school in Alaska, they stated, under the teaching environment, the principal treats the teachers as professional colleagues and gives them freedom and responsibility in accordance with their interest, talent, and achievement. Change must involve teachers' input and decision thinking at every level of opportunity. Teachers at Clark are extensively involved in planning and implementing the educational program of our students. Involvement includes the collaborative goal setting, bi-weekly department chairman meetings, peer coaching, articulation with feeder elementary schools, planning and implementation. Teachers also play a major role in student scheduling and referrals for placement both in their junior high school setting and for the eighth graders moving on to high schools. Teachers also have input into their teaching assignments and master schedule planning. This is what breeds quality education. And consequently, we'd like for you to build on this. We do have a lot of good things going. We have a lot of great cooperative environments going around the state of Alaska in all of our schools. Mm-hmm. And we'd like to build on that. And indeed, if we do that, then we can assure that we will have indeed quality education. Thank you.
Steve, thanks for your testimony. Are there any questions? Representative Burnison, we do have one more witness that we have to get in.
Not necessarily a question, but perhaps just a supportive comment. I have, over the years, adopted Clark Junior High as a special project and do a lot of work there with the students and the teachers. Mr. Chairman, we may want to, at one of our trips back as a committee, visit that school and just sort of walk through and talk to the teachers, because I agree there's a real particular rewarding experience that's happening there. And it does appear to be a lot of contentment. The students are progressing quite well as a result of the atmosphere within that school. We hold a student legislature, mm-hmm. coach with the eighth graders, and there's a great deal of enthusiasm there. So I can certainly appreciate your comments.
There are other schools in the state that do just that too.
Thank you very much. David Crosby? And Mr. Crosby is the last person signed up to testify on the list. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I have this morning, my name is David Crosby. I am the president of the Juneau School Board. I have with me this morning our resolution 7-89 opposing this bill. And what I'd like to do this morning is very briefly is just to give you some idea of the impact that a bill like this could have on our district. We presently have a budget of about $25 million. 70% of that goes into our teachers' salaries and benefits. If we wanted to reduce class size by one student district-wide, I don't disagree that the class size is an important issue, it's an important educational issue, but just to reduce it by one, which probably would not have a great impact on what's going on in the classroom, would cost us in the neighborhood of $300,000 to $400,000 per year. Now, there's talk of reducing the foundation formula funding by 5%. In our district, that translates into about $1 million or 20 teaching positions. 2 years ago, when we were forced to roll back, we did it in two ways. We riffed all of our non-tenured teachers. Because we were anticipating a decline in student enrollment, we also riffed some tenured teachers. But as you know, under state law, we cannot riff tenured teachers just simply because we're facing a shortfall in funds. But we can do that with our non-tenured teachers. We riffed all of our non-tenured teachers, and we negotiated. We were in that particular year, we were fortunate, I suppose, although for those of us who went through the process, it was a very painful one. We were fortunate in that the crisis hit in a year when we were negotiating with our union over contract over salaries. We did roll back our salaries. I think we were one of the few districts in the state that, that did so successfully. But that was the way we solved it the last time. It was a combination of reductions in teachers and reductions in salaries. And one of the things that you see here is you see the teachers' union sort of wanting to have their cake and eat it too. On the one hand, they want increased teachers' salaries. On the other hand, they want to lower the class size, both of which have a highly inflationary impact on the district. All right, let's take a scenario for us where in year one this bill passes and we negotiate and we agree to reduce class size by one. What have we done? We've increased our budget by $300,000 to $400,000 per year. I'm not sure what we've done educationally. We may have done something of benefit to the kids. But the most important thing that we've done, and I don't think you should lose sight of this, is that our teaching staff, the size of our teaching staff, is now locked in as a matter of our collective bargaining agreement. When you mandate, when you set the class size, you set the size of that teaching staff. And the only time that's going to change is if your student count changes one way or the other. Okay? You also, it also has an impact on facilities, because if you decide you're going to reduce the PTR, then you're also going to have to come up with some more classrooms. If you have extra space, that's fine. If you don't, you have a problem complying with the law. Now let's take year two. We've done this. We've negotiated. We've agreed we're going to reduce class size by one. We haven't just agreed we're going to reduce it by one. We now have a fixed class size as a matter of our contract. The legislature then says we're going to reduce the foundation formula by 5%. Where do we go? 2 years ago, we took all the fat out of our non-salary budget. We tried to keep people on. We closed a school, as you know. We did everything that we could. We don't have any place to go. If that were to happen today, I can tell you what we would do. We would, again, riff all of our non-tenured teachers. We would have to. And that's a disastrous result, but at least it would be a result that would enable us to stay within our budget. What are our other alternatives? Can we go to the borough, for example, and make up that difference? As a fact, we cannot. In this particular community, we are at the cap. Actually, right now, we're about $500,000 below the cap. Our rollover budget this year will take us above the cap. So the impact of a 5% reduction in the foundation formula funding means not only can the local government not make up the difference, the local government is going to have to roll back as well in order to stay within the federal state mandated guidelines. So where do we go? I mean, I don't know where we go at that point, but you can see what's happened now. We're in a real catch-22. We can, as a matter of our contract commitments to our teachers union, we cannot reduce staff because the effect of negotiating on class size is to lock us into a certain level of staffing. Okay, so that's where it puts us. In terms of responses to the arguments about the impact that this can have, the inflationary impact on funding, I've heard it said, well, it doesn't require you to do anything other than negotiate. You don't have to agree. Well, we can negotiate now if we want to. Okay, both sides can get together and we can make this an issue for negotiations. Don't forget that last year this body passed binding arbitration and did so rather easily. A lot of people saying this year that binding arbitration is going to go. I sincerely hope that it does not. And this is one of the reasons why I hope that it does not. You can see what happens now. This becomes a mandatory federal bargaining. The binding arbitration bill goes through, and then you know maybe we get locked into a situation that we can't afford. So it may not be a matter of just, well, you only have to talk about it, you don't have to do it, because we may have a situation where an arbitrator is going to tell us that we have to do it. Also, when you make something a mandatory subject of negotiation, it means that you have to negotiate in good faith. As a negotiator, I cannot refuse to negotiate about that issue. I've got to talk about it with the union. And the result that we come to may not be a result that we can live with. Finally, I don't know if you have any financial note on this. I know that there's a lot of pressure from NEA to do something on this. Is there a financial note on this? sooner or later it's going to come back to you, because you know here in Juneau we're at the cap. Other places are not at the cap. If you start mandating class size out in the rural districts, it's going to have an immediate impact on their budget. It's all going to come back to you sooner or later in terms of the foundation formula. So it's not something that you can export the financial impact of this. Sooner or later it will come home to roost. I would just close by saying that nobody likes large class sizes. It is, and there are other sort of political checks on the class size issue. It is something that is, I guarantee you, is hotly debated every year when we go through our budget process. Members of the public come in, they want lower class sizes. And when we have some money in the budget, we try to target some areas. If we're, you know, for example, kindergartens were a big issue a couple of years ago. We'll try to do something in that area. So we are responsive to that. But you know, I hope that you will not put us in a position where we get locked in as a matter of contract on what our class size is, which means what our staff is, which means the facilities we're going to have to deal with that situation.
Mr. Crosby, thank you very much. Do you, I have just a couple of questions. Do you favor an increase or a decrease or a status quo in the funding for the school foundation formula?
As you know, the foundation formula has not been inflation adjusted in 3 years now, I think. Here in Juneau, as I've already indicated, we are at the cap. The only way that we are going to be able to move forward with inflation adjustments to our budget is going to be if there is some increase in the foundation formula. We are headed for a crisis in this town. We, as I indicated 2 years ago, we did roll our teacher salaries back. It was a very painful process. Last year, we negotiated some minimal increases, 2% this year, 2% next year. But the impact of that on an annual basis is over $500,000.
But your position on state funding is?
Is that it should be increased. I mean, realize that that's probably unrealistic to talk about in this year. But, certainly it's got to happen.
Okay, I sort of discerned that from your comments. But did I also understand you to say that it is the goal of your local school district here in Juneau to reduce class size?
We have, as part of our policies, class size limits, which we don't always abide by, just because it is not physically possible.
But I don't understand why that's your goal. If here in your position statement you're talking about the effect of decreased class size is mixed at best, why would you just respond to public sentiment that's strongly in favor of smaller class size if you don't really believe that it does anything good for the students?
Well, there are two answers to that. One is from an educational standpoint. I'm not sure. The research is mixed. Certainly, within the range that we can operate, the results, I would not hazard a guess as to what the results are when you take 28 in a classroom and move that to 27. I don't think that that's going to have a major impact on the quality of education. On the other hand, I do know what it's going to cost me. It's going to cost the district $300,000 to $400,000, and I'm not sure that we get any big educational gain from that. If we could, I mean, parents believe in it very much, and I, you know, we're elected public officials, and we try to respond to that. But when you sit down and you go through the same hard process that this committee is trying to go through, and you just have so many dollars to go around, and you say, where do you want to put it? Where can you put it? Then you have to start making the tough decisions, and one of those decisions is quite often a compromise on the class size issue.
I can appreciate that. The last point I wanted to explore here is the whereas that talks about class size and teacher load being a management decision. Are things not as creative here in Juneau as maybe the example that was given of Clark Junior High in Anchorage, or is it in fact different than the resolution states in that you actually are in communication with teachers in a professional manner over teacher load and class size, and those things are handled in the professional arena as opposed to the bargaining process. Is this accurate?
We do negotiate on some teacher load issues, for example, extra assignments and stuff like that. But I think that the point of that particular whereas is that particular issue has such an impact on what you can do with the rest of your budget that it deprives you of any flexibility in your management decisions. In effect, everything would be driven by that class size issue. It would have such an enormous impact on our budget and our flexibility in terms of future planning, because we know what our staff levels would have to be.
Thank you. Are there further questions? It was my intent today to, as we discussed last time, to see if people were for this, against this, or had no recommendation. So I'd like thank you, Mr. Crosby. I appreciate your testimony. So my intention is to entertain a motion. We have had three hearings, and I think people have made their views known. I'd like to entertain a motion and have people vote their conscience on the report sheet. So is there any committee discussion before we take that action? Representative Bernberg.
Mr. Chairman, are we dealing with the 116 committee substitute?
Yes, we do need to adopt. Thank you, Representative Bernberg. We need to adopt the committee substitute.
Yes, so moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Is there any objection to the adoption of the committee substitute? If not, that is the item before us. Representative Bernberg.
I have two technical questions, and I'm not sure what the answers were. We had on line 11 the question of certificated employees, whether this should include, my first question was whether this should include non-certificated as well as certificated employees. That was my first question. I see people shaking their heads.
Want me to speak to that briefly?
Sure, Representative Dahl.
I think the intent is to deal with negotiations with people who are responsible for teaching those students in those classes, the certificated employees. It may be a different issue to raise, but in terms of consistency with the intent of the legislation, I think the intent of the legislation is to deal with the teachers and certificated employees as a group.
Okay, and my other question was on line 13. The original bill had workload, and this now says teacher load. It seems to me that workload is a broader term than teacher load.
That's correct. And there is, there has been discussion about exactly what is encompassed there. I wanted to try and increase people's comfort level by having a less expansive term included in the legislation.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we pass out CS for House Bill number 21, Hess, with individual recommendations.
Okay. Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you all very much. This was a lengthy consideration of this bill, and I appreciate people sitting through it. Is there any further business to come before us? We will be at Spring Creek Correctional Facility tomorrow.
Yes,
and I encourage on Saturday.
I need to make a brief announcement about Spring Creek. The state is in litigation on the design and construction of that. So the public testimony at the hearing will not involve the design and construction, but we will be going through and we'll be able to be briefed individually.
On Saturday, I need to make an announcement that we will not be meeting at the Anchorage Legislative Information Office. We'll be conducting the hearing on the endowment, the governor's endowment proposal, at the school district offices on the Bar Road.
It starts at 8:30 on Saturday.
Jim, what is the starting time of the hearing on Saturday?
10 o'clock.
And it's going to be an all-day deal?
Yes, you should plan on all day.
And it'll go
to 10 to 12:30 and
1:30 to 4.
Oh, okay, good.
Well,
Max, what time does the van leave from the LIO for us?
8 o'clock.
So we need to be there.
Sharp.
Yes.
And not Bert Sharp, just Sharp.
Yes, ma'am. Max, is that the school?
I'll adjourn the meeting at 10:05 a.m.
I understand. Well, they cited...